When I was talking to Maria this week, I told her she should consider integrating my mother as a bit in her show, especially when my mom is reporting to me. I'm talking to Maria's mom, Marilyn. My mom called me this week and said, "Hi, honey. Listen, I talked to Marilyn, and I just want you to know, honey, she said that Maria doesn't always check her voicemails till after noon, so she didn't want you to feel bad. And she asked me, when do you use your phone? And I said, oh, that's a good question. I'll ask him. So is there anything you want her to know?" And I'm like, Mom, we're in our 40s. I think we can handle this. It's going to be okay. I hope that everybody has stories that they carry in their memory to make them laugh. Growing up, my sister, my parents, and I often ate dinner together at the kitchen table, and one night the four of us were gathered around the table, beginning with our salads, cucumber, tomato, and iceberg lettuce, passing around the salad dressing, and Dad goes first, grabbing the French dressing, and he gives a big shake, and nobody had twisted the top on previously, we realized. So this entirely full bottle of orange-red goop flies everywhere intensively, including directly into my face. And we say life is a lot like a bottle of French dressing. About 3 years ago, I'm at church on Sunday morning preparing for worship, and I'm in one of the bathrooms down there in the narthex down below, and I see a little spider web, and I grab a paper towel to clean it up. And then I did what you're not supposed to do. I used the toilet as a wastebasket. So I flush the toilet and throw the paper towel spider web down it, and I hear clink. I think, what was that? I put my hand on my breast pocket where my reading glasses usually are. No. Yes. Just at the point of the force of the flush going, most my glasses had hit the tank, boom, and they are gone. And at that point, I had not preached a sermon in about 10 years without my glasses. And I realized, today, I am going to preach a sermon without my glasses. So I stood up here with the text and vaguely saw some of it and remembered some of it and made some of it up. The book of Ecclesiastes says, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heavens. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. For me, those are some of my funnies that I hold in my heart. I hope you have yours. And I'd like to hear some of yours. And it's also true that I have not always been able to laugh. One of the most painful symptoms of my alcoholic bottom was that for periods of time, I lost my laugh. In situations when my brain would know something was funny, it just wouldn't come up. And I sit there and think, that's funny, but I don't feel it. Religion also has histories of not doing very well with humor. One of the reasons why many people are averse to religion is they have experienced it as overly serious about life. Who here has experienced a minister or a community religiously being a little too serious about themselves or dour? Okay. It's quite a few of us. The movie Doubt is great with this. Two giants, Philip Seymour Hoffman and Meryl Streep, are among the actors, and Meryl Streep plays the severe Catholic nun, school principal, Sister Aloysius. She is determined to seal the school off from any kind of modernization, no modern thought, no modern behavior. She scolds people about any little thing, including using a ballpoint pen, which I didn't even understand why that was upsetting. And although that's a bit of a caricature, I think, some unfair in some ways to many religious folks, there's a lot to it, and religions have earned that reputation in some ways. I am fortunate, as I know many of you are, who've been in Unitarian Universalism for a long time. My minister, from the time I was very little, constantly reiterated the importance of laughter and humor in a healthy religious and spiritual life. Unitarian Universalist minister Tom Owen Toll says, "Laughter is the explosion that results when the gap is perceived between what is and what could or should be." So I should have my glasses on when I'm preaching. They shouldn't go down the toilet when I'm cleaning spider webs, but that happened, and it was funny to me. There's a great story in the Bible. Sarah is way past menopause. Abraham is 100, and the Lord tells them they're going to have a child. And she laughs, and the Lord doesn't like it, and he says, "Why is she laughing? She doesn't trust me." And the Lord comes back and fulfills his promise, and Sarah laughs again and says, "The Lord has given me this situation where everyone's going to laugh at me, because this was not supposed to happen." And they name the child Isaac, which means one who laughs. So I think that's kind of a feminist theology story, because the Lord does not get lighthearted in this story. He in this story, is all serious. And she sort of says, "Hey, I think we should laugh, dear God, at this one." Reverend Owen Toll goes on praising laughter as the blessing that restores sanity and reduces us to right size when we're thinking we're a little bigger than we are. Laughter is affectionate needling that purifies our spiritual system. Laughter is the acknowledgement of the ridiculous that dwells just inside our shell of dignity. And laughter is a voluntary way of granting our brains an oxygen bath. Fortunately, we look to science in our religious life, and that helps us realize that humor is very important. A lot of times, I think, in society, it's overlooked how vital humor is for our well-being. But laughter is a great ingredient for body, mind, and spirit health. Scott Weems, I encourage you to check this guy out. He is a cognitive neuroscientist at the University of Maryland who recently wrote a book called Ha, The Science of How and Why We Laugh. And he's out there on the interview circuit. There are a lot of podcasts of him right now. Scott Weems, professor, believes humor comes from a deeper desire to understand the world. There are many positive correlations between the use of humor and the development of intelligence and creativity. So if you want to work on your intelligence or your creativity, you can engage in jokes or humor and vice versa. Our capacity for understanding and feeling humor is related to a portion of the brain called the anterior cingulate, which is also the part of the brain where we process conflict, emotional or cognitive conflict. Things don't fit together, the world doesn't make sense, something's not happening like we expected it to. That part of the brain helps us process that, and that is the part of the brain that engages humor. Good example that he uses: we often laugh at funerals, where I think if you don't think about it too much, one would think that's just a place to cry. But no, that old adage of it's a tough, sad situation, laugh or cry, usually a healthy response involves doing both. So today at Gary's memorial, I'm sure we'll be crying and laughing. And he says that mixing in that positive thought, like at a sad memorial, helps you to take more ownership of a situation, feel less powerful over a sad thing that happened that you might not have wanted to happen, whatever it may be. Humor helps human beings to connect. A classic technique for a speaker or a preacher is to start with a joke. There's good reason for that. It loosens people up. It puts down our shield of pretentiousness or arrogance or not wanting to hear or listen. So it kind of opens up the heart. Laughing with others is an equalizer. It can mend fences. It can help people connect. Laughing at or putting down is not good. That separates, obviously. Spiritual exercises, for cuts which come from the small group curriculum, I encourage you to try them out this week, to not just think about humor or laughter, but practice it. Debbie did the laughing meditation. You can do that with yourself or others. Some of my favorite yoga teachers involve a little laughing, and Buddhist meditation leaders do that too. So you can laugh and meditate. Or number two, make somebody laugh. Bring that blessing of laughter to somebody through whatever. This is a great technique for hospital visits or talking with friends when they're down. Engage something that you saw that's funny. Laugh every day. I encourage this one for a week. Robert Fulghum, Unitarian Universalist minister and writer, says that he ends every night by doing or finding something that's funny to him. A lot of times he's got a book of cartoons or something, and he goes to bed laughing. I like to end my night with Jimmy Fallon and his stand-up monologue with the Roots right there and whatever the other guy's name is. But whatever for you, it doesn't have to be in the end of the day, but once a day, and I'm sure many of you already do this, engage something to feel humor or laugh. I have a group of minister friends, and we often say that we should put together a little book of some of our funniest stories on memorials and weddings. And mine that I might contribute goes like this. I was serving the Annapolis church as an intern, and I had a wedding out on the Chesapeake Bay in the Kent Islands. And I knew summer traffic would be an issue. Friday night rehearsal, Saturday early afternoon, Saturday like 11 in the morning wedding. So I think I cannot be late for the rehearsal. I'm going to go really early, get out there. I get out on the highway on the Friday. There's no traffic at all. And I cruise free. I get there like 45 minutes early, read a book at a picnic table, get there, have the rehearsal. As I'm leaving the rehearsal, the father of the bride pulls me aside and says, "Hey, I want to tell you a story. When my other daughter got married, the minister was late. And the minister ended up being about 45 minutes late. And 20 minutes in, we decided we were not going to wait for the minister. So we grabbed a minister out of the seats, and that person stood up and did the wedding. And the minister that was to be walked in sheepishly at the end of the ceremony. And he said this to me. He said, "So, tomorrow, don't be late." And for some reason, I was like, ah! I just felt really weird energy when he said that to me. So the next morning, I have allotted the amount of time it took me on Friday. And I get out, and the traffic is like a parking lot. In Chicago summer, heavy traffic is Friday afternoon. Apparently, beach, it's more Saturday morning. So within 10 minutes, I'm on the highway, and I think, there is no way I'm going to be on time. And I have two choices. Be late to a 200-person wedding and incur the wrath of the father of the bride, or drive in the emergency lane. So I said, oh, yeah. So I get over here, and I think everyone else has their beach clothes. I have my suit, and I can explain this and try to get the officer to give me a break. So I drive like 15 miles in the emergency lane, just trying not to get in an accident. I get there 3 minutes before the wedding starts, dive in, do the fastest prep I can, and we start basically on time. And I am driving home, and I think, I think I need to more thoroughly examine the theology of the jinx. Because that guy jinxed me, man, the night before. My friend Fred goes like this. He's preaching a eulogy, and two siblings of the deceased one are bickering. They get in a physical fight and roll into the aisle wrestling in a headlock. And he has to decide, does he keep going with the eulogy or stop and do conflict mediation? He keeps going. And he, in a few seconds, the brothers realize what they're doing and where they're doing it. And they snap out of it and get back up in their seats. And so I think, you know, Fred was a good pastor, and he let them work through their spiritual growing opportunity. I always say it was kind of like a basketball coach who the team's playing bad. You let them play through. You don't call a timeout. You just and then let them readjust. That's what he did. The last one comes from Fred in Annapolis. He does a wedding on a boat, and he is standing this way. The couple's here. 15 people are on the deck, talking through the wedding. All of a sudden, over here, eyes start opening. Mouths are opening. People are laughing at something going on. Fred turns around. On the boat behind him, going by, two women are wearing coats and sharing their nakedness with the entire wedding party. Just having a great time, doing a little dance, totally naked to the wedding. That was their gift to the wedding. So Fred, that was a moment of the interdependent web of existence of which we are all a part, being fully, fully appreciated. Garrison Keillor says, humor is a presence in the world. It's a way of being in the world. And like grace, it can shine on other people around you. Kids laugh more than adults. So part of this is claiming our inner child. I encourage you to do that. What are the stories of when what was supposed to be did not match up with what was? Can you engage the silly and bizarre knowing that you might help your own health or somebody else's? Can you make a smile happen and spread grace in the world? Blessings be. Amen.